them. And we got extra police patrols in there, and we got them to respond to the people in a way that needed to be responded to. People can't call and give their names. They don't need their cars set on fire. They don't need to be shot. And so people were afraid to report things. And so once the police started taking some initiative on their own, our crime rate right now has actually been cut in half. It's a little below 19%. I think that still might be high, but considering how things were just a few years ago, it's a tremendous drop in crime. The other thing is the houses that are slated to be taken. I want you to know that the landlords, that some of them live there, that own the property, but people don't want to sell. They're not wanting to get out of the beach flats. And so many of the houses, the house I live in is 150 years old. Many of the houses that are slated to be taken out are actually of great historical value. That whole area down there was a resort area. Women ran it, widows. And some of the houses that will be taken out are the House of Claire Lindemann Fitch. And that was built in 1928, and it was part of Lindy Court. Another house is the House of Janine Picciotto, and this house was built in 1926, and it's been in Janine's family for generations. They were the owner-managers. Her family were the owner-managers of a house called Willow Grove. And I believe that house might be gone now. I'm not sure. There's the Frank Orange House built in 1926, the William Wilson House built in 1904. My house was built in 1846, and I'm part of a historic court that was known as Fisherman's Rest that was a little resort area. The Third Street realignment, there's three historical sites right that actually are the property of Seaside Company. Before the levee was built, they actually had boats tied up to the back of their houses right next to where you see Third Street, because that's where the mean high tide land was, or high time of the river, and that was all sand and river there. And now it's cracked asphalt parking lots and, a pretty ugly levee.
It was created, by the Army Corps of Engineers levees?
The Army Corps of Engineers came in because of flooding or fear of flooding. There had been a terrible flood. And to shore it up, and it has served its purpose, make no mistake. But beauty was not a prerequisite at the time, and it's kind of a big eyesore. And in the river restoration project, it is described as, having some work done and some things changed. Let's see, I hope I answered the caller's questions.
She asked you about housing and how it's being impacted. This has been brought up a number of times, but bring it up again and summarize what you think the impact will be in terms of the number of units that will be lost and whether any real alternate housing is being proposed.
Okay, what I'm going to tell you right now, if you ask someone, they will probably tell you it's very radical and not true. So I will tell you to look on page 7, table 1 of the Environmental Impact Report for the Beach Area Plan. And there you will see that there's 162 impacted units where they will not be available anymore. But all you're going to hear is about replacing occupied units, which now are down to about between 30 and 39. And that's because by raising rents or by scaring people, these houses have been vacated.
We have a caller coming in. Do you want to, let's see what the caller has to.
Sure.
Or are we finished with the question yet? I'm not sure.
Well, we can go on after the call.
Okay.
This is...
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz with... Roxanne Aquistapache. Hello? Hello?
Looks like we lost our call. Continue. And call back if you'd like. We'll try again.
Anyway, the amount of housing that's being proposed right now as moderate or affordable, I'm sorry, the word is affordable housing. You'll note the missing word is low-income housing. people will have to have a certain income level to qualify for this housing. And there's only a proposed, right now, 25 to 30 units replacement housing.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi. I was wanting to ask your guest, who I understand has been involved in the process, attended public meetings on this matter, to characterize for us the nature of the process and the way she feels the public has been responded to by the public officials.
Okay, do you want to take that on the air or off the air call?
Oh, I'll just let her have it.
Okie doke. Thank you.
Well, I found it really discouraging. I've actually found it extremely demoralizing. And you had mentioned that Scott Kennedy and I have crossed swords. One of the reasons that any of the city officials and any of the groups that are working against the beach flats have crossed swords is because the only time that we really have access to them is for 3 minutes a piece during public meetings. And during that time, we're basically ignored. They don't even answer. People have asked them direct questions and they refuse to answer. Or they pick and choose who they will answer and who they won't. I was in a meeting in the Beach Flats trailer where a young gentleman whose house he's having to get out of asked a question about traffic, and Scott Kennedy and Michael Hernandez looked right through him, never answered him, never acknowledged that he had even spoken. And then a woman asked just about the same question who was an attorney, and she got a very respectful answer. So I get very angry. I'm a pretty passionate person, and I confronted Scott, and I said, is there something that we're missing? Like, do we have to have a certain income level, a certain way to dress that you will pay attention to us? And so I'm not his favorite person because I do. But the problem is bigger than that. It's that during the whole time the public addresses these meetings, people whisper to each other, the officials, they pass notes to each other, they snicker, they laugh, they scratch themselves. I mean, it's like, yeah, we have to listen because that's part of the public comment, but basically we don't want to hear. In the whole city council, I would say that, you know, I feel that there's only about three that are respectful towards us, one being the mayor, the other Catherine Byers, Mary Beth Campbell, and everyone else I question.
Let me point this out. I was at, of course, the working group forum yesterday at Loudoun Nelson Center, and while council members routinely ignore oral communication and even public hearing comment on not just the beach flats, but Pelton Street is a notorious example of this, but the sleeping ban, which is what I've been working with, is also another. It is true that the EIR, anyone who puts in a specific question about the beach flats' bad impacts on the physical environment, will have to get an answer through the EIR, right? In other words, that they will have no choice about that.
That's true, and I would really like to encourage anyone to please send your comments about the EIR, because you don't have to be a brain surgeon to have it, but please just make sure that it's about the physical impact. I'll go into that later.
And you're on the air with Roxanne Aquistapache. Hello? Caller. Okay.
Yeah, don't give up hope, caller. Sometimes we have to kind of wait because we're finishing a thought here, but you know, you may have to let it ring 5 or 10 times, but do keep those calls coming, and the call-in number here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, is 423-5361. We're talking about the enormous beach flats development, and we have with us a beach flats resident and a student of that development, a person who's been really investigating it. She's brought in not only a knowledgeable associate, her daughter, but also some hefty tomes on the subject. The glitzy plan itself, is that in fact not true?
I have, but I do want to finish my thought about city officials, and that is that the thing that has really, I think, really bothered me and horrified me is that the people who are the most disrespectful, and that is Mike Rotkin and Scott Kennedy,
both have privileged places in our community. Mike Rodkin is a professor of community studies up at the university. I believe he's an example for the young people in front of him, for all of his interns certainly. He routinely waits until everyone has given their opinion, and they've given it respectfully, and they've backed it up with statistics, and they've only taken their 3 minutes, and he writes down every single point and then annihilates the people one by one at the end of every meeting in front of the TV cameras.
Without a right of reply.
Right. We can't say, wait a minute, you know, wait a minute. No, we never get to speak again. He always has the last word. And I've heard him call landlords slumlords. I've heard him call people who charge extremely reasonable rents. You couldn't rent anything in the city for the rent. He call them rent gouging slumlords. He calls people names. And the same with Scott Kennedy, someone who's from the Peace Resource Center, who believes in Gandhi, calls people names, ignores them, is rude to them. I don't think these people are really even living up to the position of respect that they have in the community.
Actually, that's an interesting topic. I, of course, am a constant critic of Scott Kennedy and Mike Rodkin. I think Rodkin should be recalled. I think it would be a very salutary, positive impact on the political climate here. It's not just, I'm not just trying to be mean and nasty here. I think Mike has had his day in the sun. He wields all too much influence, and moreover, he has been elected with promises that are not being kept. And I believe that the progressive community that elected him has to withdraw its mandate if it finds it has been betrayed. And since I believe that is the case, I think that a recall action, and I suggested this after the Pelton Street property debacle, where the city council, five members of that city council, refused to consider the 5,000 plus signatures that came in on petitions asking to wait on the sale of the Pelton Street property. No, they just had to sell it for $700,000 homes and dump the homeless garden project, Mike Rutkin's recent response in City on the Hill Press notwithstanding. If you want to see his response, you can read this week, City on Hill Press. They're not going to take us seriously until we take serious action to remove them from office. And waiting until 2000 for Mike Rodkin to leave office means you're going to have to put up with two more years of crap, even if you get good elections, good people voted in at the next election. So I'm encouraging people who are serious about beach flats, Pelton Street, the sleeping ban initiative, to begin a recall initiative. I admit it, admittedly, it would take time and energy, but I think sufficient number of people are angered about betrayal here and about the need, more important than to punish Mike Rodkin, simply to get him out of the way.
But isn't his term ending?
It ends in 2000.
Oh, I thought he was on his
Kennedy's
way
term ends
yes,
this
I
year.
Know. I so, know. I that's so, kind know. Of a blessing, but
right. well, yeah, I mean, I would have to say that I have such significant disagreements with Kennedy. I urge that he not be reelected in 94 when he ran, and unfortunately he was, although he got the least number of votes. So I have to agree on that. Now, let's get back to the environmental impact report.
Can I just say one more thing? Mr. and Mrs. Hashimoto, who own one of the properties that are going to be taken by eminent domain, live in Merced. Now, this is still America. This is not a country where it is against the law to own property in another city where you don't live. Many people lived on their property that were landlords, moved somewhere different either because of job change or moved on up, basically, but kept their properties as rentals because they either intended to come back and retire in the beach area or whatever. We have a couple who definitely, there's more than one, but this couple particularly drove 3 hours for the April 21st meeting of the city council, and were given only 3 minutes to address the city council on the proposed takeover of their property. They let the city council know, I want you to know these people are both extremely physically ill, both the man and the woman, and they're elderly, that they had no intention of giving up their property. And they were basically told by Scott Kennedy, by Mike Rodkin, you know, basically it's a done deal, too bad, you know, after 3 hours, and they had a 3-hour drive back. And there was some discussion after the meeting, as I understand I wasn't there, where they were told basically the same thing. You might as well just stop fighting us. I mean, no one has any rights. It's not just the poor people. If you are against this plan, you have no rights and no one's going to listen to you. I'm pleased to say that this couple does not intend to give up their property to the city for any, you know, for any price, and they are in fact going to probably move into litigation against the city, and I wish them all the luck in the world. But they have committed no crime by owning a piece of property somewhere that they do not live.
Now, let's again remind the audience, because I think this is very important. It was brought up yesterday by Doug Rand about the EIR and the date and the procedure for getting comments in on that.
Yes.
Caller, keep ringing in. We'll pick you up on you soon, as soon as we finish this talk.
Go ahead.
I want to
go on the EIR?
Yeah, let's give them that information out first.
Okay.
But keep ringing, caller.
I just want to look in my information here, and I hope...
Well, actually, while you look, we'll put on the caller.
Sorry.
That's okay. Wow. Missed you again, caller. Okay. Sorry about that.
Let me tell you. First, I want to give you the address where you will send all of your comments on the EIR. You will address them to Ciel Cirillo, CeilCirillo. Those are two names. City of Santa Cruz Redevelopment Agency, 323 Church Street, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. All your letters will have to do with physical impact. Whatever it is, whether it's the air quality, the traffic, the what you see as a problem, please just relate it back to the physical impact on either the neighborhood, on the city, whatever. These are the rules of, you know, these are the guidelines, the CEQA guidelines, and that's all that they really need to consider. We'd like lots of letters. Get your friends. Have a letter writing party. That would be the best way you could help us. Volume counts.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, good afternoon, good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. North and his guest there. It's my understanding that the only thing that can be challenged in the courts in an eminent domain case is whether or not the bid is reasonable. The bid for the property. Once eminent domain is asserted, it's pretty much a done deal. That's what redevelopment agencies do, as I understand it.
Gosh, if you're asking me, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but what I can tell you is the realignment of Third Street is not necessary to anything. So I'm only assuming that people do have a right to fight it, and particularly here, there's an element of environmental racism, which is only people of color and poor people are being displaced by this project.
There's another point I wanted to bring up.
And
here,
that is a legal term, environmental racism. It is litigatable.
Interesting.
That may well be. The other point would be just the broad case for or against development in what generally can be called a tourist town. I think if we look at the changes in Santa Cruz, the corridor from Highway 1 to the wharf is a natural for development. We're going to see a lot of development south of Laurel over the next decade, let's say. It's natural. Santa Cruz does derive a great deal of its revenue from tourism. And it would be very difficult to block tourism, per se. Now, the degree to which the Seaside Company might be being subsidized by the city of Santa Cruz, I suppose is disputable, but there is a lot of spill-off. I think your guests would agree with that. There's an article in the Sentinel 5898 about the Third Street realignment. Just to pull one sentence out of here, it says that would be bad news for the city because it's estimated the boardwalk contributes either directly or indirectly some $3 million to the city's general fund revenues. That's nearly 10% of the total general fund budget.
Any comments?
So there are trade-offs involved here.
I agree with you. And, you know, I think that the trade has to benefit both sides. And, unfortunately, I think the deck is stacked on the side of the Seaside Company. I agree with you that we are a tourist town. I was raised in Santa Barbara, which is also a tourist town, and they've gone through great changes. The problem is that you can't just say, well, we'll just we can do anything because change is imminent. Someone said change happens just like other things happen, and you know what that saying is? What else happens? We don't need for that to happen.
You don't need shit happen.
Well, you know, I'm on the radio. I just don't know what I can say. But
say what you want.
I'm saying that we just really have to make sure that the kinds of things that go on really do benefit our town. You just revitalize the downtown. Why are you trying to keep all the dollars in the beach area right now? Why would you think? Is there a conference center for the beach area? Increase commercial and restaurants. Right now, people leave the beach area after a nice day at the boardwalk, and they go eat somewhere else. They pass our house all the time. Hey, do you know a good restaurant? They're tired of being in the beach area. Those dollars they want to hold captive just in the beach area. So I agree with you that there's going to be changes, but this is a huge project, and it's one of 16 or 17 that's happening right now that's impacting our community. We are not alone in the impact in the beach area. The kind of income or the kind of dollars that your city council is bringing in are quick fix dollars. They're dollars that are available from the federal and state governments that will inflate their budget temporarily. But once the building is done, once everybody goes home, they haven't really brought in any money, not really any significant amount. You know that the statistics on bringing in the box stores like Costco and Petco and all that are that there's a temporary increase in tax dollars until all the businesses that go out of business after they come in are gone. And then the tax base is pretty much the same. Until everybody goes out of business that can't compete, then there's two sets of, there's a bigger tax base. But the long-term effects are that it's only a quick fix, and I think that's what this beach program is. I would love to see some beautification in the beach area. I love my home. I'm so happy there. In fact, I would like the chance on this program to tell you about my neighborhood, because I feel that the public only sees newspaper reports and things that are unfavorable. But I am not stupid. I know that something needs to be done.
A few more comments and I'll get off the air.
Okay.
Development pressures in Santa Cruz are extreme. For example, a house priced at $250,000, a single-family house, might last on the market a week. These are realities. I don't think that the redevelopment that's been occurring over the last, since the quake primarily, can necessarily be called a quick fix. We can certainly call into judgment some of the calls that were made, all right, but they were very necessary in one sense to bring the city up to the 90s level of ability to attract tourism and sales and retail sales. I think there's an argument on that side of it. Last thing I'll say is the Third Street realignment can be considered to be a long-term plan in that there is the possibility of an eventual Ocean Street Bridge. And the final last thing I'll say is that I think there's a sincere argument for a convention center in Santa Cruz somewhere, medium size, somewhat like what Monterey has.
What's wrong with Chaminade?
I think things can be, there can be a compromise somewhere down the road. Low-cost housing, there are many different approaches to low-cost housing. The approach that that Monterey has took many, many decades ago, which is to tolerate granny units and building in the backyards, can take a lot of pressure off.
Okay, well, Bob, you're Carl, you're bringing up a lot of points, which I think are important. Let's have.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right.
I don't even know that I want you to hang up.
Wait.
Are you going away? Okay. I just want to say, what's wrong with the convention center at Chaminade? Is that overbooked? Can you not get in? What's wrong with the one in Aptos at Seascape? I mean, are those places operating at full tilt?
Caller, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, thanks. I'd like to respond to that last gentleman who raised some interesting points, and he did seem to be fairly neutral in this issue, but some of his figures are could be interpreted in different ways. For example, the $3 million that the boardwalk allegedly contributes to the city government, $1 million of that was actually boardwalk based on 5% of admissions and 5% of parking sales, so on. That was what they referred to as a direct benefit. And the other $2 million was what they referred to as an indirect benefit, where they just calculated a certain large percentage of the TOT tax, the hotel motel tax, assuming that that percentage of those hotel motel visitors were going primarily to the boardwalk. In their estimate of the percentage of hotel visitors who come to this city primarily to go to the boardwalk, what was quite high in my opinion. So two of that $3 million per year is questionable in terms of whether or not that's actually generated directly or indirectly by the boardwalk. And then Ocean Street Bridge, the traffic consultants involved in the BSAW, the Beach Area Plan, and the EIR repeatedly concluded that even if you had an Ocean Street Bridge, it would just dump an unusable amount of traffic into a cul-de-sac destination and wouldn't really improve circulation or speed the entry or exiting of the day trippers, and the relatively localized benefits were not justified by the considerable costs. That was their own consultant's determination. And then with regard to the conference center, I think most people would concur that it does seem like a good idea, at least, but it should be pointed out that the city has been rather vigorously promoting the conference center idea for at least several years. It's been basically out for bid, with the city making very clear its willingness to help the project in any way it could. And the Seaside Company, the owner of the proposed site, a willing seller ready to offer the property at a reasonable price, and nobody has picked up on it. So there's some conjecture amongst some of us that that's not really feasible for whatever reasons, and it's just being dangled out there, interlinked with the boardwalk expansion, because it is an appealing idea, so people start nodding along to the whole plan, when in fact the only element of the plan that might actually get built might be the considerably less desirable expansion of the amusement park.
Well, thank you, caller. Anything else you want to add?
Oh, that'll do.
That was a mouthful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Roxanne, anything to any comment on any of this?
I guess I'd just like to reiterate that I think that all of us, none of us are dreamers. We're really clear that tourism is the bread and butter of Santa Cruz. But with that in mind, then why do you want a polluted river? Why do you, the things that people would come to Santa Cruz for, because I'm going to be very frank. I believe that we have no airport. So I believe that people get off the airport either in Monterey or San Jose as their closest destinations. Why not go, if you get off at the San Jose airport, why not go to Saratoga and Los Gatos, which are little jewels in the crown? They're spotless towns. They have a lot to offer. If you get off the plane in Monterey speaks for itself. It's clean, beautiful, sparkling. Santa Cruz is not in that category. I'm sorry, but it's just not.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz with Bathroom Spears Broadsides and Roxanne Acapache.
Hi, this is Reckless, and I just had a comment for, not a comment, but a question for Roxanne, and I've really been enjoying your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I was wondering, I've lived in several different beach towns across the United States, and it always seems to me that as they become more tourist-oriented, that crime goes up. I don't have any statistics on that or anything, and I'm just wondering what Roxanne thinks is gonna happen when, I mean, I know a lot of locals in this town, and most of them would prefer that people from the valley would stay on their side of the hill sometimes. I mean, they have that attitude. and that I don't think Santa Cruz really needs any more tourism than it already has. I know the business people that have money invested in those tourist-type things wouldn't agree with that, but I think a lot of people really don't think Santa Cruz needs any more tourism than it already does.
Any comments on that?
Well, actually, on a philosophical level, I agree with you, but I really am a realist, and I know
I know
that our town really does count on tourism, but we can control what happens, and right now it's like just get the tourists in. Make it as convenient for the tourists and let them just, you know, ransack the town basically either with their cars, their pollution, or whatever. I think one of the biggest ways to make a shuttle system work would be to keep all long-term parking people that are going to the boardwalk for the day to actually no traffic allowed other than residential and restaurant and commercial traffic in
I agree. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. They won't do it because they'd be so afraid
that people wouldn't come to the boardwalk.
Yeah. What if they didn't come?
Well, what do you think about tourism and crime? Do you think that with increased tourism that there's increased crime?
Actually, the reason I know there is because I'm a resident.
Yeah, and I've seen that happen in other
towns. Friday when the boardwalk opens, the drug traffic increases dramatically. It happens in front of my house.
Happens.
It happens on the basketball courts. It's incredible. And people I've never seen before who do not live in our neighborhood, all of a sudden they're hanging out under trees and everywhere. I'm not a drug person, so to be honest, how do people from San Jose know that they can go get drugs in my neighborhood? I can't figure it out. I'm like really innocent on that regard, but I'll tell you, it really increases, and they walk right up to the cars.
It's funny, I've seen it happen in other towns, and I really love Santa Cruz, and I think a lot of the local people here really are concerned about what's going on in their town, and I just don't want to see it here where it becomes just this huge tourist attraction, and there's no classic Santa Cruz left.
Right,
I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm going to go ahead and get off the air and keep listening.
Reckless, before you go.
Yes.
It's possible we might be able to persuade Roxanne to stay a bit longer if you would want to continue the interview on your
show. Sure. Yeah, if people are still calling in and stuff, when I get there, we'll talk.
Sounds great.
Have a great show.
Thank you.
Bye.
Go ahead with what you were saying. We interrupted you.
I turned 51 this year. Every once in a while, my brain just stops, and it just did.
That's good. Take a breath.
Well, just have to start on another tack because...
That's fine. Actually, we're going to have a brief musical break. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Cut him short. Homage to Mara!
And Bill King's execution 4 years after, remember how those courtiers took their final bow. With his writing 4 years after the Bastille fell, he still recalls the old battle. Yeah! All of the ruling class, so all the generals out of their ass.
Long live the revolution!
Man up, you digger of bloody grave!
Man up, we've got to be clothed and fed.
Man up, we're sick of working. Cheaper bread!
We crowned you with these leaves, Mara, because of the laurel shortage. The laurels all went to decorate academics, generals, and heads of state, and their heads are enormous.
Good old Mara, by your side we'll stand or fall. You're the only one that we can trust. Mara!
Don't scratch your scabs, or they'll never get any better.
Yes, he fought, and he fought, unafraid. Steady down, traitors, by traitors, betrayed. Mara in the courtroom, Mara underground. Sometimes the otter and sometimes the hound, fighting all the gentry and fighting every priest, businessman, the bourgeois, the military beast. Mara always ready to stifle every scheme of the sons of the arse-licking dying regime. We got new generals, our leaders are new. They sit and they argue, and all that they do is sell their own colleagues and ride upon their backs. Or kill them, or break them, or give them all the axe. Screaming in language that no one understands of the rights that we have with our own bleeding hands. When we wipe out the buses and storm through the wall of the prison, they told us to outlast the law. Mara, we are poor, and the poor stay more. Mara, don't make us waste anymore. We want our rights, and we don't care.
Of course, the famous Marat Saad, Peter Weiss's play from the 60s, performed by the Royal Shakespeare Company. And I see that you re-recognize that, Roxanne. Are you an old actress here? What is this?
We want a revolution now.
Exactly. Well, we're in the studio at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, with Roxanne Aquistapache, an enraged Beach Flats resident who is not only enraged, but even worse, she's informed. So watch out, Scott Kennedy. Scott Kennedy, of course, will be on our show on Thursday at 6 o'clock. You're listening, of course, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, as I said before, 96.3. And this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. And Roxanne and Alicia, who's going to be speaking later. I've just learned we're going to get an expansion of this program for all you folks who haven't had enough information about the Beach Flats. We're going to be talking with Roxanne and Alicia. Reckless will be carrying on this interview after I leave the air at 1:30. And we're going to be having some kind of breaks because, as most of you, well, some of you may know, been listening to the station, the FCC visited our station yesterday, and we want to discuss some of the implications of that, or at least we want to play an interview with Richard Edmondson of San Francisco Liberation Radio. We're going to do that shortly, but before we do, we're going to keep on going with Roxanne here and the issues raised by the Beach Flats. Again, I'm reminding you that those who want to make this a public process and not just a decree by the city council and a private deal between Canfield and his pals on the council, the one way to do this is to get questions in to Seal Cirillo on the environmental impact report. And give us an example of, say, 5 or 10 questions that you think are significant ones that could be raised by listeners.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind is how we can justify new rides being put right adjacent to the river. That isn't this in conflict with the river plan that the county, or that the city, I'm sorry, adopted as to the river plan as part of the general plan. How can we justify that? The other thing is the traffic impact. Anybody who drives in Santa Cruz knows that you can't get across the beach area anymore. You can't get across Water Street. I mean, all of the areas are impacted. 17 coming off of 17 on Ocean. You need to talk about, because the mitigations in the EIR are not adequate. They mitigate every negative impact, but you have to understand that not only was our environmental impact report prepared by the city, but it was answered by the city. So they just say, oh, we'll solve that. This is how we'll do it. you know, extra traffic lights. The people on Barson right now are going through hell because traffic has been rerouted off Ocean, part of the traffic, to Barson. But guess what? They all end up at the bridge. Eventually, everybody ends up at the bridge to the boardwalk. That's where they're all going. So we're just impacting more and more neighborhoods and negatively. Those are things, again, concentrate on the physical aspect.
So give us some short questions, like you know, 15 or 20 word questions people could ask. Give us 5 or 6 of them quickly that people could just kind of raise.
Robert, quickly? Hey. Yeah.
See, this the reason that it's important to do this is because many folks do not have the kinds of documents you have with you.
Okay, well, I'm sure you know about the fact that we don't have enough water to get through another drought, possibly successfully, with the number of people that are here now. You might ask about impacts having to do with Terrace Point. Remember, there's 16 or 17 projects in the hopper. The hotel rooms at the beach, the conference center, the increased density in the beach flats are actually adding density there, even though they talk about how it's too densely populated. You might ask, how are we going to accommodate with water? How are we going to... I'm sorry, I just, doing it quickly, I have been writing EIR comments now for days and weeks, and I know that I should be able to do this quickly, but I think I'm just on burnout on these aspects. I'm not being much help to the listeners right now. I hope if you continue to listen, I can go through the packet of information I have and make my brain function.
Right, and plus, of course, not just your brain that's in question here. All you brainy listeners out there, particularly those of you concerned about this issue, if you have some brief suggestions for people to write in or call in, I guess you have to write in, for environmental impact report questions to the office of Cecil Cirillo at the County of Santa Cruz Redevelopment Agency on Church Street before the deadline, which is what, May 26th, is that right?
Yes.
Then please give us a call here at 423-5361 and share your expertise. Again, make the questions brief and coherent for those of us who don't have access to all the relevant documents, who are simply Santa Cruz residents, who want to raise important issues that would not otherwise be raised, and hopefully to allow for more time for this process to have a real public input segment. Again, the number to call is 423-5361. We're going to proceed with, you actually got a lengthy list here of stuff you were going to go
through. What I was going to say is, what are you worried about? What are you, the listener, worried about? Are you worried about children? Then you might be worried about the traffic impact on that neighborhood where there's many young families and children. You might worry about the air quality on their health, asthma, all of the things that happen with a lot of traffic. Are you worried about marine animals? Well, maybe you're worried about the effect that all the pollution that goes into the river will have. There's whatever you're worried about, think about it in terms of the people in that area. What would you worry about for your family?
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I was on the air before. I had just two brief comments.
Go ahead.
About a convention center and an airport. I'll go with the airport first. I just bring up the issue that Watsonville, the airport in Watsonville seems to me to be natural for an expansion, and once again we can take Monterey as a model. You have a medium-sized airport. It wouldn't be an enormous thing, but it would serve for commuter planes, I'm sorry, and the like. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Watsonville Airport could be expanded. And
Before you go on to your next point, caller, do you want to, maybe we can have a little
sure,
dialogue.
That's cool. You bet. I'm sorry.
Well, they're looking at 10-foot wide sidewalks adjacent to the boardwalk. We were thinking they could probably land helicopters there.
That's not addressing the issue other than with
levity,
side humor. The issue of an airport is a sincere one, I think. If it's going to be raised, let's discuss it in sincere terms.
So you do see Chicago to Santa Cruz as being a booked flight?
What's that now?
You do see Chicago to Santa Cruz being a booked flight?
No, I don't think that's a correct way to respond to the issue.
Well, I'm trying to get to the bottom of what you're really thinking of.
I'll use Monterey once again as an example. They have a commuter airport, which takes flights in from L.A., et cetera. They might even have some flights coming down from San Francisco and from Fresno.
They
and the
do,
like.
You're
they're
correct.
They're feeder lines.
Uh-huh.
So you don't necessarily have a flight from Chicago, per se, right? I think it took San Jose a long time to have a flight nonstop to Boston. We can
put
it in perspective.
Could I ask you a really hard question then?
My response to the issue of tourists being able to get here by flight is that
I understand
Watson
that. I think that's really good thinking, but could I ask you a really hard question? Do you really think that Santa
sure.
Cruz right now, the city that you see, is actually in league with those other cities? Do you think that it's up to par with a Monterey? When you drive to Monterey and you see the cleanliness and the sparkling white streets and the flowers everywhere, truthfully, can you say that with our progressive city council that our city is a model for that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'll tell you, in terms of being in league with Monterey, certainly you can never compete on the basis of what Monterey has to offer, i.e. the beauty of the peninsula and the surrounding area, right? But Santa Cruz has its own offering, including the nature of the town, I think is attractive for people that want to come here from wherever, from Fresno, and hang out for a day. Certainly anyone that has experienced the commute on the weekends here, which is bumper-to-bumper cars from over the hill, indicates that there's tourist attention for Santa Cruz. It's a pretty town. It's going to go through its changes. I wanted to bring up the issue of a convention center. The Chaminade is more of a retreat. It doesn't really cut it in the sense of a convention center. And I think it's inevitable, and it would serve the community well, that somewhere, maybe even south of Laurel, that there be some proposals and plans for a convention center.
What do we not know about Chaminade? It is a conference center. Why do you see it as only a retreat center?
It's way up in the hills.
It is right behind Dominican Hospital.
It could not hold the thousands of people that a convention center can.
You're only talking about 368 rooms. What are you talking about for a convention for a conference center on the beach?
Talking about a hotel combination. A convention center is that which is useful for trade shows, for major engagements. And they have shown themselves to be marketable and beneficial to their communities across the country. And certainly what Monterey accomplished with the DoubleTree, which is right off of downtown, right off of Alvarado Street, I think most likely one could argue benefits the community. It's done very well also. It's a very pretty building in my opinion.
So do you see, no, I don't think anybody's disputing that a conference center could be great for Santa Cruz. Why do you think right on the most beautiful beach in Santa Cruz, that is the place for factory outlets and a conference center?
I never said that.
Well, I'm just asking you because I'm not disputing that a conference center could be valuable, but I